bless your heart. I'll bring you more than a song, for a song in itself is not what you have required. You search much deeper within, through the way things appear, you're looking into my heart. I'm coming back to the heart of worship, and it's all about you. All about you, Jesus. I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I've made it. When it's all about you, Jesus. My Jesus, I love thee. I know the follies of sin I resign. My gracious Redeemer, my Savior art thou. If ever I love my Jesus, 'tis now. I'll bring you more than a song, for a song in itself is not what you have required. You search much deeper within, through the way things appear, you're looking into my heart. I'm coming back to the heart of worship, and it's all about you, all about you, Jesus. I'm sorry, Lord, for the thing I made it, when it's all about you, all about you, Jesus. All about you, Jesus. All about you, Jesus.
Humanity can be defined by what they do with Jesus Christ. There are, really, you can put humanity in three groups based upon Jesus Christ. There are those who have nothing to do with Jesus Christ. They are either ignorant of him or they have willfully rejected him. That would be the one group. Another group would be those who know about Jesus Christ and say something about following him. And that group is large. Just the very fact that you are here this morning, it at least gives you entrance into that group, those who would give some kind of a token or a purposeful following of Jesus Christ. He says in the first verse of the text that was read this morning in verse 25, now great multitudes went with him. This was a time of popularity in the life of Jesus Christ. Yes, there's beginning to be contentions, there's getting to be people attacking him. But there is still an intense amount of popularity as he comes around the Judean hills and heads in and considers more and more Jerusalem in the last weeks, months of his life. But then there's a third group. This third group are people who are intent upon following Jesus Christ. They are the disciples of Jesus Christ. They are the one that when Jesus says, follow me, they do so. They're the ones who, when Jesus came to them along the shores of Galilee and they had their fishing business there and dad was there and their friends were there and their boyhood home was there But Jesus said, follow me, and the Bible says they forsook all. They left it. They left dad, they left the nets, they left their boyhood home, they left the beautiful smells of the Lake of Galilee, and they followed Jesus Christ. There are those who have sold out, who have given their life, who have given their cost, the cost of their life, who have given the bulk of their life. They alone, these who have given all, are the disciples of Christ. There is a cost associated with the first group. There is a cost involved in ignoring Christ. It is eternal judgment, eternal separation, eternal hell. There's also a cost of being just a token follower of Jesus Christ. There is earthly separation. There is earthly judgment. There is frustration. There is emptiness to being just kind of a wannabe disciple of Jesus Christ. There's also a cost of real discipleship. And I hate to use that word real, and I'm going to fight today using the idea of true discipleship or real discipleship, because I think the word disciple is enough. You either are or you are not. The rewards of discipleship, of real discipleship, are great. There are eternal rewards. There is immediate satisfaction. There is a long-lasting peace here and now. There is rest both here and now. But there is a cost. There is a cost associated with being a disciple of Jesus Christ. Verse 25 says, great multitudes follow him. If Jesus was running for president of the United States in 2008, he would now say inspiring and encouraging words, attempting to keep the large crowds with him through the length of the day. But instead, look at verse 26. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother. By the way, that word hate in the Greek is hate. An intense dislike. If anyone comes to me and does not hate his father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. I have a problem with that verse. I have two problems. First, I have a problem with the fact that Jesus says, if any man does not hate. Because are we not told in other places to love? We are commanded to love our parents. We're commanded to love our wife. Husbands, love your wives. We're commanded to be pitiful and loving towards our children. How can Jesus say this, that if you do not hate? And then I have a second problem with this. And that is this list. I mean, he begins with father and mother. I mean, to whom do I owe more? To who do I owe more allegiance and more love than my father and mother? My wife? I'm supposed to hate my wife? After all I've put her through? After all I've gone through with her? I find the older I get, the longer I'm married, I can only think of my wife in the most tender terms. My children? I'm supposed to hate my children? My future? My delights? Those to whom my heart is most naturally bent and pitiful. My brothers and sisters, I'm supposed to hate them? She who in all the world is most like me, I'm supposed to hate her? In my own life? I like me. I like my life. I like eating, I like resting, I like playing, I like working, I like talking, I like fellowshipping with other people. I like life. I don't want to die. I like life. And yet, Jesus says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, and even his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. What is Jesus asking? What would he have of those who would attempt to follow him? What is the cost of Christian discipleship? Number one this morning, disciples of Jesus Christ must love Jesus Christ supremely. Supremely. Sometimes my love for my wife causes me to place my hope in her. I hope that she will love me physically. I hope that she will satisfy my emotional needs by delighting in me. I hope she will stimulate my intellect in our conversation. I hope she will fulfill the emptiness in my heart and in my being by being all that I want her to be for me. And then, because it is impossible for her to always be all those things for me, I get discouraged and grumpy. Why? Because I have my hope in my wife. Instead of the Lord, I have a misplaced hope. I have a misplaced love. Rory, if you would come stand here, you're going to be Jesus. And Lynn, you're going to be my wife. So you get to stand here. And Sarah, you're going to be my daughter, so you get to stand here. Kind of a lineup this morning. You know, we get the misconception that sometimes we say, if I love Jesus, that means I don't love my wife. You know what the very truth of the matter is? I just explained what a misplaced hope is. A misplaced hope is when I love my wife and I want the things from her that I really ought to be getting from Jesus Christ. And when I think my joy should come from her, when I think my future should come from her, when I think my delight should come from her, and then she doesn't do the things that I think she ought to do, I get angry. And you know what the real problem is? I haven't loved Jesus Christ first. I haven't loved Jesus Christ first. We have this idea that if I love him first, that then somehow my wife is second and my daughters and the rest of the world are third. And the truth of the matter is there's that idea is wrong. Economists know that the study of economy is the study of the creation of wealth. And an economist knows that there is no limit to how much wealth there is out there. Now, there's a limit to how much wealth Ross Purcell has, but there is no limit to how much wealth is out there. And there's any investment businessman knows that his whole agenda in life, as a businessman anyway, is to use the wealth and resources and the time that he has to create more wealth. He's not trying to steal wealth from other people. He's trying to create more wealth. And as everybody creates more wealth, then everybody's doing better. And you see, I take that illustration, I bring it back here. The more I love Jesus Christ, and the more I put Jesus Christ first in my life, and the more I have things where I love him supremely, and I give him everything that I have, every ounce of my devotion belongs to Jesus Christ. Every ounce of my being and every ounce of my person, I ought to focus on Jesus Christ, to love him first, to love him so much that it appears by contrast that I hate my wife and that I hate my daughter. For indeed, to love is to choose, and unless I choose to love Jesus Christ first, I got that in a rock when I was a teenager, and a teenage girl gave it to me. I don't know what she wanted. I had no clue. Anyway, this little rock said, to love is to choose. You know what? That could be conversely said, to choose is to love. When I choose Jesus Christ first, what I've done is actually decided that I love Jesus Christ first because I've chosen to put him first in my life. And as I choose to put him first in my life, as I choose to love him with all my heart and all my soul and all my might, Deuteronomy chapter 6, then there's an overflow of that love and I have love for my wife. And it is as I put Jesus Christ first and I love him with all my being and that I put in my priorities my wife in the next place in my life, it is then that I have opportunity to love my daughter as I ought. For I cannot truly love her unless I first love Jesus Christ. You know what a lot of the problems is? A lot of frustration in life and hearts. There's a lot of moms in this world who are trying to love their daughters first. Going to put this one first. After all, this is my daughter. I'm going to love this one, and I'm going to protect this one, and I'm going to put all my attention and all my focus right here. And then that woman is frustrated because her husband doesn't do the things that she wants him to do, and this is just a distant thing. It's all backwards, my friend. You got to start here. You got to start with God's priority and love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and all your might. You put him first. You put him where he ought to be in your life. And then you know what's going to happen? You'll find that you'll have love left over for your spouse. And you'll find that as you love your spouse and you put your trust in your spouse and you endear yourself here, that there is love also for your children. You see, there is a biblical order, a biblical pattern. Thank you very much. What's the next point, Zeke? We must hate so that we might love. It sounds weird, but that is exactly the case. Someone who loves flowers hates weeds. Someone who loves children hates ignorance and abuse. Someone who would love their wife first has chosen to hate Jesus Christ. No, you must choose to love Jesus Christ with all your heart and with all your soul and all your might to the extent that it is hate in comparison what you feel for your wife, for your father, for your mother, for your child, for your brother. It's not merely a hate by comparison. It is actually the distinction is so large, the gulf is so big, that the choice is made because there is no other choice. I choose to love Jesus Christ. I choose to put Him first. And because I put Him first, therefore, by contrast, the wishes of my wife have to fall so far second. No, we must hate so that we might love. We must put our spouse and other people second. And then we must hate so that we might choose. You see, it is only as I've decided that my wife is second, it is Jesus that is first, my father is second, my brother, my sister, my own self, my own lust, the things that I want so much in my life, they must be way down from where Jesus Christ is. It's only as I hate who I am that I can love Jesus as He ought to be, that I really choose to put Him first. If we would be a disciple of Jesus Christ, we must not have misplaced loves. We must hate misplaced loves. What is Jesus Christ asking of those who would imitate Him, those who would attempt to follow Him? What is the cost of Christian discipleship? First, disciples of Jesus Christ must love Jesus Christ supremely. Second, verse 27, and whoever does not bear his cross and come after me cannot be my disciple. Number two, disciples of Jesus Christ must die and must keep dying. Paul put it this way, I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me, and the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave Himself for me. I must die. I must die to all that I want to experience the lust of the flesh. I must die to all I want to have, the lust of the eyes. I must die to all I want to be, the pride of life, that I might experience it all for Christ, that I might obtain it all for Christ, that I might be, yes, be it all for Jesus Christ. It is a well-used illustration, but the text, I think, demands it. There's a man, and he's on his way to the cross, to Calvary or some other crucifixion site. His good buddy sees him carrying the cross down the road and cries out to him, "Say, Judah, how's it going? How's the wife and kids? Doing all right? Good. So how'd that little business deal go? Yeah? I suppose you'd be looking forward to doing that again. Hey, want to come over tonight?" The man's carrying a cross. The man carrying a cross has no personal future. The man carrying a cross has no personal hope. The man carrying a cross has no personal agenda. The man carrying a cross has no will of his own. As a matter of fact, he must submit to his own cross. We must submit to our own cross. No will of our own, no agenda of our own, no hope of our own, no life of our own, for I have been crucified with Christ. If any man would be my disciple, he must bear his own cross and come after me. We must submit to our cross. We must submit to our cross. B. We often don't like our cross. We want to trade it for a different one. I'm pretty tall, so I think I should have a long cross. You know, that would be fitting. Sometimes children are asked to carry adult-sized crosses. To me, they appear to be much too heavy for them. I personally think that Kyle Westra, the 4-year-old who lost his mom this week, has been given a cross that's much too heavy. Why should children have to endure a broken home? Why should a child ever be neglected or abused? It's a wrong cross. But Jesus died on the cross because of sin, not his sin, someone else's sin. It was sin that nailed him there, and it is sin that builds your cross. And it is sin that builds my cross. The sins of ourselves and the sins of others. Sometimes people use drugs or alcohol or sex or fantasy or pleasure to escape reality. They're trying to avoid carrying the cross. They're trying to avoid the life which they've been given to live. Instead, they become chained to heavier and heavier crosses. Embrace your cross. Embrace the reality of the cross that God has assigned to you. Christianity, discipleship, is not a cakewalk. It is an advanced placement course. We forever endure a tension between a holy, eternal God and this temporary, sinful life. We're surrounded by the consequences of sin and the forgiveness of sin and the tension that is in there. Sometimes a cross might be a service, a ministry, or a mission field. Sometimes a cross might be a relationship. Maybe a spouse or a father or a mother might be your cross, or a son or a daughter might be part of your cross. Sometimes your cross might include illness or pain. Sometimes our crosses are very similar to those around us, and sometimes they are very different, but we each have a cross. A life spent running or cross denying is a wasted, frustrated life because the crosses don't go away. When you stop running, you'll find that your cross is right there. What is Jesus asking of those who attempt to follow him? He says, first, love me supremely. Put me first, absolutely first. So far out in front, you must choose me to be that everything else is hate in comparison. And then you must die. Every day you must die. Every minute you must die. You must die to what you want. You must die to what you have. You must die to what you want to be. You must die to what you want to experience. You must die, and it all must be for me. You must pick up your cross, the one that I have laid out for you, or the one that you find yourself because of sin, the one that you find in front of you. You must pick up that cross, and you must carry that cross if you would be a disciple of Jesus Christ. He doesn't pull a fast one on us here. Here there's this crowd, pictured again, there's this crowd following him. Instead of saying, let's go take on the Romans, let's go win the battle. No, that's not what Jesus says. Jesus says to this multitude that is following him, if you want to follow me, here are the prerequisites. And then he gives two illustrations. He talks about a man that would build. He says, here's a guy, and he goes to build a tower. And what happens if this man gets a tower half built? And then he runs out of stone and he doesn't have any finances, and here's the tower half built. What happens to that man? I'll tell you what happens to that man. Everybody goes, yeah. And Joe over there, he didn't have what it took to finish the job. That's what happened. Or what about a king? And here's this king and he's got thousands of people, but another kingdom is coming with a lot more people. What is he going to do? First, he's going to weigh the cost. Do I want to go headlong into this battle, or do I realize, what does it cost to finish this war? What does it cost to do this? And so verse 14, chapter 14, verse 33, is Jesus says, so likewise, like these two illustrations, and he's still on the topic of discipleship, he says, whoever of you does not forsake all. All. Forsake all. Cannot be my disciple. Number three, disciples of Jesus must risk everything for Christ. Every Christian at some point or another must address this question. What am I willing to risk? What am I willing to bet? What am I willing to gamble for Jesus Christ? Missionaries have to answer this question. What if I can't take all my family mementos with me? What if I don't make enough money to ever retire? What if my children don't have the opportunities they would have had if we stayed in the States? What if I get sick over there? What if my brothers and sisters and my parents grow distant from me and I end those familiar relationships that I've held so dear to my heart? What if I don't get to see my grandchildren? What if I lose it all? Will I still go to Argentina? Will I still do what I ought to do? Young people must answer these questions. What if following Christ means I lose the love of my life? What if because I choose a Christian college, I don't get the best job offer? What if my morality and my convictions, because I am a Christian, separate me from those who are cool and those who are fun? What if I end up in my circle of friends being the only one who serves Jesus Christ? What if I am mocked and hated because of my choice? What if? Married people must answer these questions. What if my spouse despises my devotion? What if following Christ demands that I submit or serve or love my spouse and they take advantage of me? What if? Is discipleship really worth this? Is it really worth following Christ supremely to embrace the cross regardless the cost? To put Jesus Christ so much first in my life that everything else is hate in comparison. To pick up a cross every day, every day, every day, every day, on your way to work. What do you do out the door? You know, grab the cup of coffee, pick up the cross. Every relationship that you come in contact with, what do? You pick up the cross. And you act like Jesus would act, and you put Him first. And you deny self, and you forsake all. You turn your back on everything else except what Jesus Christ would have us to have. This is a sobering sermon. It has weighed me down for the last 2 days as I've considered this thing. But I don't think I'm being too sober, because as you look at the verse 26, he says, if anyone comes to me and does not hate, he cannot be my disciple. And verse 27, and who does not bear his cross, he cannot be my disciple. And verse 33, whoever of you does not forsake all that he has cannot be my disciple. I would do a disservice to the text if this was a, hello, let's have a party, it's New Year's sermon. I'm sorry, it's a sober concept. What are you willing to risk to be a disciple of Jesus Christ? Imagine, if you will, a team member who quits in the middle of the game. Imagine an assembly line worker who walks away from the job in the middle of the work. Imagine what that does. So therefore, imagine a Christian. We do it all the time. But imagine a Christian not following Christ. It is incongruous. It makes no sense. And yet somehow we're willing to live that in-between life. We're not an ignorer of Jesus Christ, but we're not a disciple of Christ either. We're an acknowledger. We're part of the great crowd that is kind of with Him, but not following Him. Why? Why must this be so negative? And I think the answer is found in verses 34 and 35. That the Holy Spirit is lined up with this text. Salt is good, but if the salt has lost its flavor, how shall it be seasoned? It is neither fit for the land or for the dunghill, but men throw it out. And I think what he's trying to tell us here is salt is only good if it's salty. Therefore, a disciple is only valuable, the conclusion line there, a disciple is only valuable if he is following. The second a disciple moves from following Jesus Christ, he's no longer a disciple of Jesus Christ. If Jesus Christ is not Lord of all, the hill trite, Doug Oldham, thank you. If he's not Lord of all, he is not Lord at all. You're either a disciple of Jesus Christ or you're not. You're either salty or you're not. You're either on the boat or you're not. There is no halfway group. There is no 50% disciple. You know, I'm a half-time student at the university. No, at the University of Christ, you're either a full-time student or you're not a student. You're either a follower of Jesus Christ or you're not a follower of Jesus Christ. Love Him supremely. Put Him first in everything. Wow. So much that everything else, everyone else is hated because He is first. Pick up a cross, whatever it is, my cross. Illness, frustration, relationship, anger, finances, whatever the cross is, whatever today's cross is, pick it up. Come on. And risk it all. Nothing held back. Would you do that? Come on, really. Would you live such a life? Think about it with me. Would you live such a life? Do you really want to do this? This be a disciple of Jesus Christ, to put Him first in every relationship, to pick up that cross every day, even though you don't like it, and to risk everything you have and are for Him. Come on. Is it reasonable? No. Right? It's not. It makes no sense in this life to be a disciple of Jesus Christ if this is what it's going to cost. What if you never got married? What if you never got to play baseball ever? Is it worth it? What if he did that? Would you still follow Christ? What if God took your husband? Would you still follow Christ? What if your family exploded? Krista left you. Boys went bad. Would you still follow Christ? What if your financial stability was gone, Ken? You didn't know how you were going to eat your next meal. Would you still follow Christ? Huh? What if instead of teaching kindergarten, God puts you in an aid station taking care of dying women for the rest of your life in Laos, Nigeria? That was your calling. Not what you wanted, but what he wanted. Would you still follow Christ? Huh? What if? What if he took everything you have? You say, Pastor, is he going to do that? Are you wishing that for your kids? Are you wishing that for Mrs.? No, I'm not wishing that for anybody. But that is the calling, is it not? Is that not what he's saying in the passage? Unless you love him more than you love your wife, more than you love your kids, more than you love your very self, which is a lot, you can't follow Jesus Christ. And unless you're willing every day, every day, every day, every day, every day to die to all that you want to have, be, and experience, die again. What are you going to do today? Die? That sounds like fun. What are you going to do tomorrow? Die? What are you doing for fun tonight? Going to die again. That's what we're going to do. We're going to pick up this cross, and I'm going to carry it, whatever it is. And praise God, the cross sometimes is fun to carry. But you know what? What if it isn't? What if it isn't? And are you willing to gamble at all? Zeke, you like to place bets. Are you willing to bet at all? Aren't you glad you're not the preacher's kid? Are you willing to bet at all? Your wife, your family, your job, everything. Huh? Everything. Are you willing to bet at all? Whatever. Boyfriend, job, school? Huh? Would you put it on the line? What if you were the only one, David, the only one you knew that followed Jesus Christ? Would you still do it? Would we still do it? Who would do it? Who would do it? Who would do such a thing? Risk everything for discipleship. Risk everything to follow the Lord of glory. The one who died for me, the one who loved me, the one who created me. But everything, to love more than anything so much that I hate, to pick up a cross regardless the cost, to put it all on the line every day. Who would do such a thing?